Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A number of questions. What happened to Jamal Khashoggi? What should President Trump do about the missing journalists? And is it not, you know, obvious anytime you take somebody out of a Saudi embassy on foreign soil in pieces? Do we need to know anything more? And as the evidence mounts and the crown prince floats theories and alternative theories, where does this leave the U.S.? And here to discuss this issue is Bulent Alirzari, he's a senior associate, Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's Alirzari.
Thank you. I apologize, doctor. I appreciate it. Struggled a little bit. So where does this go now? I mean, the evidence is mounting, and we understand that Saudi Arabia and the monarch is a very strong and important ally to the U.S., but is this not a slippery slope for the U.S. as well?
Well, absolutely. But in terms of the information that's actually coming out, it's mostly unofficial Turkish sources. There have been a couple of official statements by the Turks, one by the Minister of Justice, basically saying that it will be the prosecutor's office in Istanbul that will conduct the investigations and then issue a report. And then the prosecutor's office said yesterday, finally, that almost 2 weeks after the alleged crime, that they were investigating, and then the report should be out in a few days. The crime was committed on Turkish soil, although the Saudi consulate in Istanbul is technically Saudi territory, but nonetheless, it's within Turkey. So Turkey has the primary responsibility to actually move on this issue with respect to criminal indictments. And at some stage, once the president decides, it will issue indictments against presumably the 15 Saudis who came and to do the deed, apparently, as well as the consul general. Now, the U.S. position here is a very delicate one. President Trump is obviously willing, judging by his comments, to accept assurances that were provided to him on the phone by King Salman and the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is accused of directing this hit, as well as directly to Secretary of State Pompeo when he was in Riyadh by the King, as well as Mohammed bin Salman. Pompeo then went off to Turkey, where he met the Turkish president, as well as other Turkish officials, where he was apparently offered the chance to listen to the audio tape. And nobody knows how that was acquired, or the actual murder. But he says that he wasn't offered it. The report suggests that he declined. So clearly there is evidence, audio evidence, maybe even visual evidence, that this was done. And when Turks finally move to official statements, as opposed to the unofficial meeting that they've been doing, filling the pages of Western newspapers.
Doctor, I hate to interrupt, but I think we're losing the connection with you. We're only hearing every other word. Maybe if you could call us back real quick and try again. Go ahead. Yeah, we're going to have to try and reconnect because we're losing you. I apologize for saying. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll try and getting back on the line, folks. We lost the connection, and as soon as we get him back, let's take a break right now, and we'll come right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back with Dr. Bulent Alirzari, who is the founding director of the Turkey Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Doc, thanks for holding on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So we were talking about the slippery slope for the U.S. and how to go about dealing with this.
Well, just to wrap up what I was saying, the U.S. will really be put on the spot when the Turks issue their official report and presumably indictments against the Saudis involved. And if the indictment is broad enough to actually hint or even state that this was ordered by Mohammed bin Salman, then the U.S. will have to make a decision whether it can actually try to maintain business as usual with Saudi Arabia and with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who really runs the country because his dad is ailing. So what has happened is that Pompeo has managed to get a few more days for the Saudis when he was in Turkey. But eventually, there's going to be an indictment, and then the U.S. will have to make a decision.
I mean, how do folks in Turkey and other areas reacting to this rogue, you know, theory of these folks when most of these were from the Crown Prince's inner circle? And, you know, we're on a consulate property that belongs to Saudi Arabia, and how do rogue guys gain access to the consulate and get to do what they're doing? And allegedly they were interrogating him. They were I'm hearing stories about administration of drugs, and maybe they gave him too much, and then they had to chop him up in pieces in order to take him out. How can anybody really believe that the Crown Prince is separated from all of this?
Well, it is impossible to believe because the New York Times published pictures of one of the 15 who was at Mohammed bin Salman's side when he visited the U.S. as well as on other trips. They arrived on two private planes, which are apparently owned and controlled by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The Consul General works directly for the Saudi government, and apparently they tortured and killed, this is according to Turkish sources, they tortured and killed him in the Consul General's office with him present. I mean, there's no way that Saudi Arabia can deny this. Now, the Turks are shocked, obviously. I mean, I'm speaking to you from Washington, just a few blocks from the Washington Post, where he was an LPED columnist. Everybody's concerned about the fate of Jamal Khashoggi and, more importantly, how the United States is going to react.
You know, one of the things that I find a little ticklish and actually a little obnoxious, to be quite frank with you, is that we keep talking about these material considerations of the importance of our relationship with Saudi Arabia, you know, and money's entering the conversation and everything else. And it seems to me that you know, we erode the moral compass of our country if we continue to go down that path.
I couldn't agree more. It was actually President Trump himself who said that if he was killed, this is his first comment, actually, if he was killed, he was not killed on American soil. He was killed in Turkey, and then brought up the issue of the $110 billion worth of arms sales. But frankly, you know, although both are important factors in the equation that need to be taken into account, ultimately, this man was a permanent resident of the United States, wrote for a leading U.S. newspaper, and even if he didn't have either of those factors in the equation, he was a journalist who was killed in a diplomatic compound by an ally of the United States, and the U.S. needs to respond forcefully. This is something that President Trump does not agree with. In fact, he's broken with many of his Republican colleagues. In fact, some of his closest associates, like Senator Graham of South Carolina, who want a very strong response. And I honestly don't think that President Trump is going to change on this. He wants to maintain the relationship with Saudi Arabia and somehow deal with this issue with minimal cost to that relationship, although I have my doubts that that the relationship can continue as it used to be.
Well, I also have my doubts, just as you said, that the president is going to remove or get out of this kind of clumsy way that he's trying to cover all sides against the middle. You can't do that. I mean, I think you got to make a definitive statement. I understand that they're an important ally, but there's just some things you just really cannot defend, and I would suggest that this is one of those.
Yeah, and in fact, the discussion in Washington is now expanding beyond the Khashoggi case and the U.S. Reaction to it, and specifically the reaction of President Trump, to President Trump's attitude towards journalists. And in general, clearly, he's been unhappy with the coverage that he's had in the American press. So he has been quite critical of them. And some people, fairly or unfairly, are extrapolating from that a general attitude towards, the expendability of critical journalists. Now, I think that's taking things too far. But President Trump really needs to put a marker down here that that while you can criticize the press, there are certain limits beyond which you should never go, and torturing and then killing and eventually dismembering a journalist is simply unacceptable according to American values.
And Doctor, the Crown Prince himself, Mohammed bin Salman, he's been kind of clumsy in the way that he's handled a lot of diplomatic issues over the past couple of years as well, correct?
Absolutely. You know, when the Lebanese Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, visited Saudi Arabia, he was summoned to the palace in the middle of the night, apparently, and then detained. I mean, we're talking about a prime minister of a fellow Arab country. He launched a war in Yemen, which he thought he would win easily. And by the way, the man who's likely to be the fall guy in this affair, General Asiri, was Mohammed bin Salman's point man in that war, which has not gone well. So there may be two strikes against him, which might cost Asiri dearly. And he's also imprisoned a whole bunch of prominent Saudis, including members of the royal family in the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh, and would not release them until they paid up from some of their holdings. Now, we're talking about a very impetuous young man. He's barely 30, who's upended decades of tradition of consensus building in Saudi Arabia, and honestly is endangering the very kingdom that he thinks he's going to drag into the 21st century.
There are those that are saying this is the wrong prince at the wrong time.
Nice way to put it. You know, he's the first one of the third generation of the Saudi royal family to take the throne, because the founder, Abdulaziz Al Saud, had a number of sons, and the last one among his sons to take that role was King Salman. Now, King Salman is still technically king,
right,
but Mohammed is running the country, and obviously, wants to be king when his father dies. Apparently, he's ailing, but Saudi Arabia survives because the United States supports it. This is not me saying it. It's President Trump in a speech. I think it was in Missouri, where he said, they wouldn't last 2 weeks if it wasn't for us. So if the U.S. has that kind of leverage, it should use it to actually get Mohammed bin Salman to fess up to the crime, because there is a crime, obviously, and to pay his dues, whatever they are, and that may mean relinquishing his post for the sake of the country. And then the U.S.-Saudi relationship could continue. But ultimately, as I said at the beginning, it really depends on what the Turks do, and that what the Turks do will be affected to a great extent by the dynamics between Ankara and Washington, which have frankly not been good for the past few years.
Doctor, would it be an overstatement to say this is a defining moment for the U.S. to be a credible leader around the world on this issue?
I mean, it's going too far. I mean, it's a very important issue. David Ignatius, the Washington Post columnist, who knows Jamal Khashoggi well, has actually used that expression to say that this was like the shooting of Franz Ferdinand before the First World War, which will help define the future of the Middle East, and maybe even U.S. relations with the Middle East, and maybe even U.S. credibility in the Middle East, as you suggest. But, let's see how it pans out. Jamal Khashoggi had worked for the Saudis, Saudi royal family, in fact, in the past. And clearly, Saudi Arabia has shown that it treats very harshly those who turn against the kingdom. But then, again, as President Trump rightly says, they're not alone. Look at what Putin has been doing with Russian critics. And there are others around the world that could be said about. But again, it's ultimately about us here in the United States. The U.S. has to live by certain values, And if it abandons them, then its credibility beyond our shores is less than we would want it to be.
Absolutely. Dr. Bulent Alireza, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your insight, and thanks for reconnecting with us as well.
Thanks for inviting me.
All righty. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870 as we continue to talk about this issue. I mean, this is something I think that's a defining moment for this country and how they're going to deal with this and whether or not we will allow our moral compass to erode as it relates to material considerations. I mean, on the very day that Mike Pompeo went over to visit Saudi Arabia, we receive a $100 million payment from Saudi that had been previously negotiated, but mysteriously it appears on the very same day that he heads over there. Just doesn't look good. The optics on that one don't look good at all. And the question is, should an important U.S. ally get special consideration when assessing sanctions for basically murder on our opinion poll? You tell us. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWF. We're back and we're talking about what happened to Jamal Khashoggi, and is it something that we should be concerned about? And, you know, we've had a number of texts that have said a Saudi citizen was killed by the Saudi government. Who cares? It's none of our business, really. If we're going to be, in a leadership role in this country, and it just seems to me that this disappearance of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, you know, it continues to take a lot of twists and turns that, you know, as a law enforcement officer, it would confound any legitimate law enforcement investigation. And obviously the delay in the tactics deployed by the Saudi monarch is all about concealment and therefore hampering any exploration of the truth. And the Turkish police forces have had to jump over hurdles. They've been restricted in access. And it would seem to me that when you have this type of investigation going on, that the Turkish government should, with the assistance of the United Nations, be able to seize the Saudi consul and treat it as a crime scene. And that any type of diplomatic immunity should be extinguished when there's evidence that suggests that a murder has occurred on the sovereign soil of another country, albeit the physical location where the consulate is actually Saudi territory. And that's the way it's set up around the world. But how do you let these types of things happen? I mean, do we have to go any further when we figure out that the guy has been cut up in pieces and taken out of the consulate? How atrocious does it have to be? I think, you know, the United States needs to address this event with complete disdain and disgust in order to send a message that this conduct will not be tolerated. We wouldn't tolerate it here. The continuing dialogue of the importance of Saudi Arabia as an ally, I think, has to stop. I think we recognize that. We realize that. But that has no concurrent path with what we're doing as it relates to trying to determine what sanctions we are going to employ against Saudi Arabia. It has no relevance to this occurrence. The U.S. collective moral compass has to stand strong, and I don't believe that any material consideration, whether they're buying $10 billion worth of weapons or anything else, and we do know that they're a great ally to us in our fight against terrorism and everything else, but how do we stand by when they act like terrorists? And also, we talk about whether he's given special consideration because he's a member of the media. I don't think that needs to enter into this either. This is just fundamentally and basically wrong from any perspective. It doesn't matter what class or what walk of life this individual comes from. And if we are going to eliminate terrorism and everything else that goes along with that, our allies have to be held to a standard, and I think the U.S. has to stand up and express their disappointment and their outrage as it relates to this issue. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870, On the Blue Runner opinion poll, should an important U.S. ally get special consideration when assessing sanctions for murder? 75% of the respondents say no. We'll be right back. This is Newell. We're back, and we're talking about what has happened to Jamal Khashoggi and what should be the next step for the U.S. in dealing with this issue. Let's go to line one. Don in Mandeville. What say you, Don?
Mr. Norman, I don't want to sound dumb here, but maybe I didn't pay attention in civics class. I have a question just in general, mm-hmm. and I know you're an attorney.
That may get me in trouble, but go ahead.
Those individuals who run for House of Representatives and Senate are not vetted at all. The premise that I understand is that the feeling is that the other party will do whatever vetting they feel necessary. But
when you say what individuals now, the people that are running for Senate and House,
for example,
well, they're vetted by the public through the election process.
Correct. But the question then comes down to once they're elected, and if they sit on committees that would require top secret or confidential or classified clearances, are they vetted by the FBI to get on that committee, or are they arbitrarily given that clearance?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that question as to whether or not there's a background investigation done before they go on the Foreign Intelligence Committee or, you know, intel committees or anything
right.
of that nature. I truly do not know the answer. In fact, I'll get on that over the weekend. I'll mention it on Monday.
I appreciate it. I'm just curious about that. I mean,
it's a good question. Actually, I have never thought about that, to be quite frank with you.
Until recently, you know, with the Kavanaugh situation and other situations where people have been investigated for leaking confidential information. But we have staff that is leaking information that basically is maybe not top secret or super classified, but certainly confidential. We have individuals within the government that are leaking that are not vetted. So why would they even have access to be able to get it?
There's no doubt. I mean, just the other day, well, they arrested the guy, right? He released all of the personal information of members of Congress.
Correct.
And he was able to go into a former employer's office. He's worked for a number of Congress people, and he went into another congressperson's office and accessed the computer and pulled down, trying to create a situation where they couldn't follow a trail to him. And when you look at that, you wonder, is there any security up there? I mean,
well,
you know,
it makes me wonder if they're doing that to congressmen for political purposes. How secure is the information sitting on committees that get top secret and classified?
Well, my confidence level is not that high, and my crack research folks here have said that the Intel Committee members are vetted by DOD, NSA, and CIA. Occasionally,
okay.
they fail, and they remove themselves for consideration to those committees.
Yeah, because you never hear about, well, he was going to be appointed to the committee.
No, you won't hear about that because those types of situations are all, privileged and protected information, and rightfully so, it should be.
Okay.
There's any number of reasons that are legitimate that are not necessarily scandalous why you won't get on. Having gone through the process, not for top secret clearance, but for whatever level of secret clearance that I had. And it's so complicated. You get these clearances and you don't even really know what it is, the clearance that you have sometimes. So, I never did quite understand. I know I had one. I don't know, how deep it was or how far it went. I needed it for a certain meeting, and I was able to get it. And we had these meetings monthly and sometimes quarterly. So,
right.
But Good questions, Don. And I'm still going to look at that because I think it's an interesting question, and it's a great question. I never thought about it. Thanks so much for calling in. Have a great weekend. Let's go to Ricardo on the North Shore line too. What say you, Ricardo?
All right. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
Yeah, I just had a comment, you know, about the reporter in Turkey. I don't see why that's an American problem. I mean, we can't police our own city streets, and I'm talking about New Orleans, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Phoenix, you name it. There's a problem here, and we're going to police Turkey and Saudi Arabia. I think that's their problem. Now, we shouldn't waste our time and money doing it.
Well, I don't think we're wasting any time and money. The thing is, it's just what sanctions would we place on them for this very egregious act? I mean, this guy worked for the Washington Post. I think he lived in the U.S., but he's a Saudi citizen.
Saudi citizen, right.
Right.
Exactly.
But obviously, you know, you go into a Saudi consulate in Turkey in a foreign country, and you basically, you know, you commit murder. And, you know, and whether or not we want to be allied where it's a government or leader sanctioned situation where this monarch, the prince, the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, you know, may have been the one who actually directed it. Obviously, the folks that they got on video, I mean, how stupid are they? They don't realize that there's video all over this thing. I mean, it was just amazing the amount of video that went on here. And, you know, and some of the faces that revealed themselves are in the inner circle of the crown prince.
Yeah, I understand.
We could be next. I mean, our reporters.
We're going to bring them to the United States and hold.
No. Never said that. Just talking about whether we're going to sanction those individuals and whether we ought to let that go. And not take some kind of action against them. I think it's incumbent upon the U.S. to do that.
And that's the problem with our government. It seems like a lot of things we make our business that aren't any of our business. And don't think that our country.
Let me ask you this: we're selling them. We're selling them.
The Russians don't do it. Everybody does it.
We're selling them billions of dollars of arms. You don't think we have an interest?
Well, I mean,
should we cancel that sale? Right.
And I mean, you got to accept the good with the bad when it comes to diplomacy. All right.
I get that. And maybe I'm looking at it too simplistically. It's just my opinion, but I just don't.
And mine is only mine, and I respect yours.
And I just don't think that we should erode our moral compass for material consideration, no matter how strong an ally they are to us. I don't think that we should sit by and allow them to do that because guess what? The next reporter may be the U.S. citizen reporter if they're willing to do this. And that's the I think that's a legitimate concern, and I don't think it's that far-fetched. Ricardo, thanks so much for calling. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the conversation. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. Just a reminder, the Mac and Cheese Fest in Louis Armstrong Park on Saturday, free admission starts at 11 a.m., and then the Crew of Boo Parade Saturday at 6:30, starting at Washington Park in the Faubourg Marigny and rolling through the Quarter and ending up at the World War II Museum, and Barktoberfest at Dat Dog on Magazine Street is going on as well. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Time for that cash contest. Ready to win the big bonanza bucks, $1,000 in the cash contest brought to you by WeFixMoney.com. Need emergency cash? Check out WeFixMoney.com for more. The code word this hour is semester. Text SEMESTER, SEMESTER to 72881. That's 72881. Text now. And you could win the big bonanza of bucks, $1,000. Listen for the next code word just before the top of the hour, every hour now through 6 p.m. $1,000 is up for grab. Win it for your wallet. We never charge for text, but individual plan, text, and data rates apply. And remember, please don't text and drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.